Before we start our episode today, I wanted to talk a little bit more about our favorite Needed. Needed isn't just for moms. They've created an incredible supplement to support dads too. From a men's multi, sperm support, to omega-3s, and CoQ10, Needed takes a whole body approach to men's fertility and health. Learn more at thisisneeded.com, and don't forget, our community gets 20% off your first order with code VBAC. Hello, women of strength. It is the very last episode of 2025, and I seriously cannot believe it. I'm so honored to have our friend Amanda from California, in San Diego, right?
Mm-hmm,
San Diego,
yeah.
California, with us today. She has two stories for you, a C-section story that took a really wild ride. Is that how you'd kind of describe it at first?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, a wild ride through cesarean and postpartum. So I'm really excited for her to share this story with you, because I know so many of us that start out with a cesarean, it's a wild ride and it's not something we often expect. And then her VBAC story. So Amanda, thank you so much for being here with us, and tell us a little bit more about you and why you're here to share these stories with the community.
Thanks for having me. I'm Amanda Landau. I'm 33. I have two boys. I have a three-year-old and a 10-and-a-half-month-old baby. I live in San Diego, and I am here because I think I have a little bit of a unique experience. I had a really, I would say, difficult first pregnancy birth experience, and then a little bit of like a serendipitous VBAC is like mm-hmm. what I like to call it. I think I told my friends, like, I had a random VBAC, which I think is really different than a lot of folks in this community. I think, like, a good reason. People do a lot of planning. I, on the other hand, did not. So it's just a little bit different.
Yeah, it is absolutely different. I think, you know, that we talk about it, like the prep that goes into VBAC. It is important, but we also know that you can sometimes just have a VBAC, like, without really even expecting it. So I'm really excited to dive into your stories. We're going to take a really quick break and get into the intro, and then come right back in and turn the time over to you. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, love, let's dive in. Let's dive in. I'm really excited to hear these.
So I got pregnant with my older son in, I'd say, November of 2021, end of the year.
Okay.
And from the moment I found out I was pregnant, it was a challenging pregnancy. I had a subchorionic hemorrhage,
I've
heard that before, which, you know, could be a big deal, could not be a big deal, but I bled severely up until close to my third trimester.
Consistently?
Consistently. Was in and out of the ER in the first two trimesters, was in triage often. It was pretty difficult and scary. I also had, around 24 weeks, they found out that I had a short cervix. And so I got hospitalized because they were concerned that I would go into labor.
Dilating.
They gave me steroid shots. It was just, I got diagnosed late with gestational diabetes. Like,
at 24 weeks, in the 20-ish weeks?
In the 30s.
In the 30s.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you end up getting a cerclage at all? Or
I didn't, because they said it was too late.
Oh, okay.
I think they do it up until 24 weeks, and maybe it was like 24 and a bit, almost close to 25. So yeah, no, basically I was just afraid to move.
Yeah, plus having the sub chorionic hemorrhage, like that's a lot.
Yeah, I did not enjoy any of that pregnancy. I was just waiting the whole time for the other shoe to drop. Couldn't even like wrap my head around like, oh, when the baby's here, because I just the whole time like didn't believe that, he would actually be here. And as like time progressed and I got closer and closer, I like started to kind of think about the birth, but in my head, like this probably sounds really silly too. I never even thought that I would have a C-section. Like it didn't really even occur to me for whatever reason. And now, I like to kind of share with my friends who are, getting pregnant. Like it's good to even though if you don't want a C-section, it's good to think about, how you would approach or plan for something like that if it does happen, because I felt so unprepared.
Yeah, well, you're not alone in saying, like, I didn't even think about a C-section. I never thought I would have a C-section. I mean, we have 400 plus episodes, and there's so many people that are like, that was not even close to being in my mind. And I know, yeah, most of my clients too, my doula clients, they're like, I was not expecting that, you know?
Yeah, I didn't. And I think, it is what it is. Like it happened and I wasn't prepared,
Yeah.
but if I could go back, I would have,
Would prepare a little
prepare
bit.
a little bit more, at least like have a plan if possible.
I think familiarizing yourself, and that is a hard space to get to, because if we allow ourselves to go in there, it's like we're projecting it somehow. But if we don't, then it's like, nope, we're not letting that come in. But also, if it does happen, which we know a large percent of the time in the US anyway, it is happening. And we're not prepared, that can also throw us for a loop and then potentially make us maybe not have as good of an experience because we maybe not know the options or how it is, and it can be scary.
It would have been good to just think about it in the
Just
back
a
of my
little
head.
bit.
Yeah, just like to consider that it may or may not happen. So, with the short cervix and all of that, they ended up putting me on progesterone. I was able to make it until 37 weeks. Around 37 weeks, I stopped the progesterone and I started having like some weird symptoms. I was having like a lot of what I thought was like Braxton Hicks. I was having, some sketchy symptoms. So I called the nurse and I said, hey, like, I feel like I might be leaking some fluid, but it only happened once this morning when I got up. But, it was just a tiny bit. Like, again, the theme of like my life is that I probably should have like done more research and prepared. So take note, everybody. I was imagining like my water to be broken, like
In the movies.
and she was like, well, if it only happened once, like you're probably fine. And so the day goes on and I went to Sprouts. Like I dragged myself to Sprouts and I think I had just gotten on maternity leave. And later in the evening it happened again and I told my husband, like, hey, I'm just gonna, go get checked out at triage. This just seemed a little bit weird. And I was having like some vaguely like decreased movement, or it was just in my head because I was anxious. I'm not really sure. So I show up at triage and they, did the test and they're like, oh yeah, like that's amniotic fluid. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. We're going to induce you because this has been going on for more than 24 hours now. And I just start crying. I'm like, but I have 3 more weeks. I'm not ready. Meanwhile, like they've been telling me I'm going to go into labor early since like 25 weeks. I'm like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. And they're like, it's going to be fine. So, calm down, all that. And I wasn't dilated at all. Like it just, was leaking
A little
slightly.
bit of fluid, yeah. Maybe water, a high break, baby plugged it with movement, a little bit of
Yeah.
fluid here and there.
So they're worrying about infection, but I seem fine. So they're like, okay, here's the Cytotec. And, that kind of was the beginning of as you might be familiar
Of the
with.
experience,
Yes.
yep.
So that didn't do too much. And then a couple hours later, the Pitocin starts. And that was probably like the turning point. I'm not a medical professional by any means, but I just think I had too much Pitocin. I didn't have any breaks in my contractions, like none at all. I was like shaking severely, like my face was hurting. And I kept telling the nurse, I was like, I don't feel good. Like, I don't feel right. Like, something isn't right. And she kept being like, calm down. You're fine. You're fine. Everything's fine. And then my water was broken without me like consenting to it. Like, I didn't know.
What?
If I did consent to it, I don't remember. Like, it wasn't really a, it was maybe like, this is
a nonchalant conversation. I'm doing this, not like, yes. Hey, I would like to do this. What are exactly. your thoughts on this? True informed consent.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it just happened. And then, you know, this is now like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. So this started at like the evening and 6:30-ish. I was like, okay, I have to push. And the doctor was nowhere to be found. And so I told the nurse and she's like, no, just wait. And I was like, no, like I can't wait. Like I need to push. And so, you know, I start pushing. The doctor came and I think I was like watching the heart rate monitor. Something was going on. And I was like, oh, is the baby okay? Because it was going down, down.
During your contraction and pushing or like
during the pushing phase. Yeah. And with the contractions. So they had me like flip on all fours and it just maybe for 5 minutes they were letting me push, but they were telling me, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. And I was like, everything is definitely not fine. And you know, next thing I knew, you know, they were wheeling me away into the operating room like so quickly that they rammed the hospital bed like into the door frame. And I remember it like falling off the hinges a little bit. It was crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And my poor husband was left in the dust by himself in a room. There was nobody left in there and nobody like updated him. I mean, understand.
Were they talking to you about it or?
I think they said like, we're gonna, like, we have to get the baby out. You know, we're gonna do a C-section. Is that okay with you? And I was like, I mean, yeah, obviously. Like,
hey, help my baby.
Yeah. Like at this point, do what you got to do. But I get into the operating room and there's just so many people in there. And I remember just thinking like, or I think I even said it out loud. I kept asking, I'm like, am I alive? Am I dead? Like I was in such like a haze. I felt so out of control. I had no idea like what was going on. No one was communicating with me like, oh, we're, you know, cutting into you and we're taking the baby out and you're okay and the baby's fine. So I kept saying, am I alive? Is my baby alive? Because I didn't hear any crying. My husband wasn't there. Like nobody was. And, you know, I understand it was a true emergency, so they probably didn't have time. But as like the person giving birth, I felt like so out of control and just so lost and scared. So that's kind of where like my understanding of what was going on. My husband finally came in after they got the baby out. And meanwhile, I still hadn't heard my son cry. Like, I didn't know if he was inside of me, in the room, out of the, like, I didn't know where he was and nobody.
No one was telling you.
Yeah. So, you know, I think my husband said something like, you know, I think I just walked by him and they were like working on his breathing. And I said, just, you know, go with him, like follow him. So I was by myself for the rest of the time. I literally remember like laying on the operating table at some point, like waiting for the, I think it was like a ultrasound or an x-ray people to come in just to make sure that they didn't leave any instruments inside of me because they didn't sterilize anything properly. Like it was truly like emergency. So after all that, you know, I'm pretty sure that they also like put some sort of sedation in my IV because either it was that or like just the trauma and the adrenaline
response.
A little bit fuzzy. But I do remember getting back to the like recovery room, which was just one big room with some curtains. And I remember just sitting there by myself. They had gathered all my stuff from my labor room and just kind of like put it there. And I hear, the other women with their babies, like recovering, they're crying. And I just remember like crying there, like being like, where's my baby? Like, I didn't know what was going on. So just get to kind of like get to the point here. My son was taken to the NICU. He came out, what they said was floppy. He was not breathing. He had an Apgar of one, high fever. They did a spinal tap on him and found out that he had E. coli is what they said. So they put him on a CPAP. They immediately started like three different kinds of IV antibiotics. And I'm getting ready. Finally, they're going to let me out of this curtain room. And I'm getting ready. I get into the wheelchair and they're like, oh, no, you can't go down. You have a fever. And I knew I wasn't feeling good, but I mean, I just went through 12 hours of labor and then had a C-section. So I was like, whatever, it's fine. Just take me there. And I'm like wearing masks because this is also like the tail end of COVID. And they're like, no, you're sick. You have like an 103 fever. And I was like, it's fine. Just take
I
me
really want to see my baby.
there.
Yeah.
So I like wheel myself with the IV pole because now I'm on IV medicine too, antibiotics. And I go down and there's a picture of me holding him. Like I have no recollection of meeting my child for the first time, like at all. There's a video and a picture. And so thankfully I had that. But I mean, all that to say is like, it was a very traumatic experience. My son and I were both extremely sick. I think I like got like a sepsis code called on me at some point. He and I recovered physically beautifully. He didn't have any like lasting damage, which they weren't sure at first if he would have any sort of brain damage from like lack of oxygen, but he's like the most rambunctious, like perfect 3-year-old. He's awesome. I physically recovered, but mentally after that, I was just unwell. I developed, I mean, understandably, like based off that pregnancy and delivery, just severe postpartum anxiety. OCD too. And I really wasn't sure for a long time if I even wanted another kid. I had a hard time enjoying, it's sad to say now, but like my first year of motherhood was really challenging because I was hyper vigilant. I was, wondering something. I think at one point I was like, does my kid have a genetic disorder that they forgot to tell me about? Just, things that were just not reality, but I was so like anxious and traumatized that I just couldn't like relax.
Having a strong immune system is important, and it can be challenging during these colder months. I found it's hard to find something with clean ingredients that tastes good and doesn't have added sugar. Let me tell you, I can confidently say that I have found it. You guys don't have to look any further. I'm so excited. I highly recommend checking out Needed's Immune Support. Every ingredient is vetted by experts, and it not only includes exactly what you need, but also includes gut health support, which is pretty stinking cool. Did you know that 70% of your immune system resides in your gut? My entire family loves the immune support from Needed, and I bet yours will too. Try it today and get 20% off with the code VBACK. Find the immune support and so much more at thisisneeded.com, and don't forget to use code VBACK for 20% off your first order. All right, let's dive back into today's show.
So I did a lot of therapy and I saw a psychiatrist. I was able to get on some medication. And about a year, 15 months later, I was like, okay, I think I do want another kid, but I want it to be different when I give birth the next time. I also think, I don't think it's like, an uncommon experience, but I think it also has to do with the fact that I didn't really prepare. Is that I felt a lot of, I don't know if shame is the right word, but a lot of like hesitance around my birth story, not only because it was traumatic, but just because like I didn't have the right type of birth. I didn't feel like, not that anybody like said anything to me, but I was just like not embarrassed. I don't know how to even describe it. It's probably a common like theme amongst women who don't plan to have a C-section is like, oh, but like what's wrong with me? Like what's wrong with my body?
Yeah.
Why did this happen to me? So I guess shameful is like a right word to use in this case. So I was like, okay, I want to plan things differently for the next time now that I know I want a kid. So I need to find a provider who can deal with all the problems that I know I'm probably going to have again in my next, but also a provider who is supportive of a TOLAC or a VBAC, because that's what I think I want to do. So I had a consultation with my provider. Can I say his name? Because he's so amazing. His name is Dr. Thomas Moore. Interestingly enough, I thought maybe I would want to go to another hospital system, but I actually stayed with UCSD, which is where I give birth with my first son. And he was just, I knew it would be a good fit because immediately, he talked about my risks of, GD and VBAC benefits risk. And he was from the start, he was just like, yes, I think you should do a VBAC based on your birth history, like, labor and birth history. Like, I think you'd be a really great candidate. So, like, let's do that despite, all my other issues going on. And I happened to get pregnant pretty soon, 18 months postpartum. So, just like a few months after I met with him, and I was like, oh, awesome. Like, I already have a doctor. So I scheduled a visit with him, and we kind of talked about things again. And he was just like, I can't say enough good things about Dr. Moore. He was just so patient and so kind, and he gave me the medical perspective, but he also like respected what I wanted to do. Like, I was highly anxious. I am highly anxious, but like, especially when it came to my pregnancy, he was like, you can, he worked Fridays and he was like, you can come in every single Friday if you want. I don't care. Like, I'll reassure you. Here's my phone number and my email. And I called him all the time. This poor man. I bothered him so much. But it really made the difference. Like, I don't think I could have had another pregnancy and like had as good of an experience being pregnant the second time, even though, it was still scary. I got diagnosed with gestational diabetes like at 8 or 10 weeks, like had to take insulin for the rest of my pregnancy, had a short cervix again, didn't have the subchorionic hemorrhage, thankfully, but was waiting for one the whole time. So yeah, we just kind of had planned for a VBAC together, and we talked about all the benefits and the risks for me and the baby, and that was kind of the plan. And then as things progressed and as I got closer to the end of pregnancy, I was like, I'm changing my mind. I want to schedule a C-section. I was struggling with the unknown. Of course, in birth, I don't think you can ever be 100% sure about anything, but it felt more controlled to have a scheduled C-section. Like, I knew I would come in, I knew what would happen. And I think part of the like trauma from my first pregnancy in labor was that I didn't have control. I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. And in ways, maybe subconsciously or maybe consciously, you were like, not only do I kind of want something that feels more control, but like I wasn't maybe as present and don't remember meeting my baby for the first time. And I want to do that. I want that.
100%. And I was like, a VBAC could go really, really well, and I could get that, or I could go really, really poorly. And then I'm going to end up, I think my worst fear was having another emergency stat C-section, not necessarily the C-section itself, but like the feelings of being out of control and again, like missing things. So I was like, well, if I'm going to end up with a C-section, perhaps anyway, I'd rather just, plan for that. And he was like, okay, Amanda, like you do whatever you want. Like, I'm still here to tell you like the benefits of having a VBAC. Like, that would have been his choice if he was giving me his medical opinion. But he was, of course, schedule it. And if you change your mind, like go for it, whatever you want to do. And so they scheduled it for 39 weeks and maybe like 4 days. And I was like, there's no way I'm making it to 39 weeks. Like, I'm stopping my progesterone again at 37 weeks. Like, I know I'm not going to make it past 37 weeks. And I was begging whoever would listen to me to schedule my C-section for 37 and like 5. And they were like, no, that's not like medically appropriate. And I knew that, but I again, like the sense of control, I was like, but if I go into labor and then my plan is like ruined, because then it's like, it's all up in the air again. So of course I stopped my progesterone at 37 weeks, and I woke up a few days later and I was like, I think I'm having contractions, but they're fine. Like they're 6 minutes apart. Like that can't be real. So I told my husband, I was like, hey, I'm just gonna go drive myself to triage and just see if I'm in labor, because I'm not totally sure. I left my bag at home. I said, take my son to school and I'll call you. And I'm sitting in morning rush hour at like 8:30 in the morning, and I'm like, oh God, okay, these are real. And I'm calling my sister. I'm like, can you time my contractions for me? I'm stuck in traffic. And I show up and I'm, I think, 3 centimeters and fully effaced. And I sit down on the bed and my water breaks on
On
the
the bed.
bed. Yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. So we was still planning on having a C-section, and I was like, okay, like, how does this work now? So the attending doctor came in and he's like, hey, like, we can do your C-section in 5 minutes. We have like 8 scheduled for today, but you're in active labor, so
Whoa.
we could bump you up. And I was like, no, my husband's not
Husband's not even here.
coming. And I was like, he's like, but like, do you want to try a toe lock? And I was like, no, I don't. My plan is to have a C-section, thank you. And meanwhile, I'm waiting for my husband to drop off my son at preschool and my dog at my parents. By the time he got there, it was like maybe an hour later, they came back in and they checked, and I think I was about 5 centimeters. Something, if it's okay to go back real quick, something I want to say to you is, when I did decide to do my planned C-section, I did plan more. I contacted UCSD has a really wonderful free doula program. And I'm trying to remember, it was like the Hearts and Hands program. And so I got in contact with the coordinator who connected me to a doula, and I gave her all like my scheduled C-section date and my birth plan. And there wouldn't be that much for them to do, but I just needed that advocate. I needed someone to help me. Mostly just wanted someone there to explain to me what was going on if the doctors weren't speaking to me again. So I did do more planning. I had like, I had an agenda. So when I went into labor, it kind of threw everything off, because that doula was in LA that day. So I asked the nurse, I said, hey, can you see if anyone else is available? And they did send someone over. It's such an awesome program. I honestly didn't know it existed, but one of my friends who gave birth there told me about it. So they were like, usually we reserve the doulas for labor, like vaginal births, but we'll see what we could do, So they sent someone over. So she kind of showed up at some point later in the day, but by the time the doctor came back and my husband was there, I think I was 5 centimeters already, and he was like, I think you should see how you're progressing, just see how it's going. Everybody, they sent in the midwife to talk to me. Everybody was really like pushing, not pushing in a pushy way,
But
but they
encouraging.
encouraging. That's a better way to say it. Yeah, they were really encouraging, and they were so like relaxed about it. And everything I had read, honestly, and heard in the past was like, hospitals and doctors and the system wants to push you into a repeat C-section because it's easier for them, and because you're at a little bit of a higher risk with the, uterine rupture and all that. And I was like, well, I'm the one who's saying that I want the C-section, and everyone's like, no, you can do it. Like, they were so supportive. And I was like, all right, like, I guess I'll wait and see how I progress. But my absolute like threshold for moving to a C-section is, I do not want any like Pitocin. I don't want any interventions that are going to like progress my
Increase
labor.
that,
Yeah,
or yeah.
exactly. Or increase my risk of rupture. And like, if at any point you feel like something is not 100% looking good, I want you to tell me, And then take me for a C-section, like no questions asked. And they were like, yeah, that's no problem. We'll let you know. We'll come back in 2 hours. So I think by the next time they came back, I had gotten an epidural. I was 8 centimeters. And they were like, you're doing so good. And I was, you know, I had my epidural, so I was relaxing. And they're like, we'll come back in another hour or two. And they came back and I was still at an 8. And the doula was like doing, she like brought me the peanut ball and we were doing some like movement and I was, you know, on my side, the pillow, I don't know, was doing all these like weird moves. And then at some point, like in the evening, I was 10 centimeters. I felt like I had to push and it was just like, it was such a beautiful like moment, not to like make it sound so dramatic, but the hospital is like, you know, it's in such a pretty location near the beach and we had this beautiful view and it was sunset and the doula had like dimmed the lights and she had brought these like little fake tea light candles and my husband had music going and it was just, it was a good atmosphere and it was so different than my last
the first time.
And I was just, it was like, when I look back on it, I was like, it was such a nice experience. I'm so glad I got to have that. So that whole time we had two nurses, my husband and the doula in the room. Like the doctor would like pop in and out every couple of hours, but I mean, it wasn't that many hours, but maybe every hour or so just to kind of see how things are going. While I was pushing, I pushed for 2 full hours, which is a long time, but I guess technically they were like, this is your first birth, you know, vaginal birth. So it wasn't like completely unexpected, but I mean, bless those nurses and the doula and my husband, to be honest, because every time I had a contraction and every time I pushed, they told me the baby's okay. His heart rate is good. Like really, really reassuring. They knew how like anxious I was about it. They were like really encouraging. They took the time to be like, you know, he just had a little bit of a deceleration, but let's move you. They were just communicating so well. It was just, it was a very, I felt very safe. And I was anxious, of course, but they were doing a really good job reassuring me. And they were probably like, every 3 minutes, we have to say this, but they were so kind about it. And, you know, close to the end of 2 hours, the doctor came in and she's like, okay, I can't quite remember why, but she was like, I think you need to get him out soon or we're going to have to use a vacuum. And I was like, no, no, take me for a C-section. And she's like, Amanda, his head is halfway out. Like, it's too late for that. And I was like, I just pushed him out in the next 5 minutes. I think he left the room. And when she came back, he was out or coming out. They brought the mirror out for me and I was like, I don't think I need to see that. And they're like, no, you really do. You need to see like how strong you are and how you're doing. They're like, touch his head. And I was like, okay. Ooh. And yeah, so pushed him out and he was here and it was 9 o'clock in the evening or in the night. So it was like a good, this all started like 6:30 in the morning. And I just like, it was really surreal. I just couldn't believe that I did that. Without planning to do that, but I don't think I would have done it or been able to do it without everyone else's support, because I think that they believed in me and my ability to do it more than I did at the time. Of course, like I wish that I would have planned more, so like going to pelvic PT beforehand, because I got a really bad tear. I had a 3rd degree tear, but it honestly, like compared to my first experience of birth, it was painful, but like, it was fine. I've been through worse, but you know, it was such an awesome experience and it was really healing too. It helped me come to terms a lot more with my first experience. And yeah, I just look back on it with like such like warmth and happiness. And I'm so glad that I got to have that experience. So yeah, I mean, that's like kind of what happened.
I love that. It's kind of crazy. Like you are more unique because a lot of the time in the system, you're fighting against them. Not them fighting against you. And
I
I'm not saying
know.
they were fighting you, but they were like,
We're like cheerleaders. They
like,
were,
hey, like, we
yeah.
really think you can do this. We really encourage this. Like, this is gonna be great, you know? So that is more unique. That's awesome that that hospital is that hospital kind of VBAC friendly, like all around, or is it just kind of those few providers?
I think all around it is, from what I gathered, they have a birth center in there. They
Okay,
also
with the
have like a
midwives.
whole, they have a whole midwife program, which I didn't see, obviously, because I needed the high-risk doctor. But yeah, I mean, it's a teaching hospital too,
Okay.
part of like one of the bigger universities here. But yeah, it's also interesting too, the different experiences that I had at the same hospital in a span of a couple of years. So I think maybe my first experience would have been more tied to the provider who was like helping me, my OB at that time, just kind of a different philosophy, maybe a little bit more like, for lack of a better word, old school than maybe some of the providers that I saw my second time around. But yeah, truly it was a really good experience. And I felt so like strong and capable after, which is funny to say because I think so many people like have done it, you know? But
But when you do it, you feel differently about it. Yeah. I love that you described it as serendipitous. It's my serendipitous birth, my unexpected serendipitous birth.
exactly. I had two unexpected births.
Yeah, you did. And like from like one end to the other too. Did they ever say you kind of had like a really long subchorionic hemorrhage, you know, going on, a lot longer than a lot of people. They kind of like it heals and everything. Do they feel like, I'm wondering if it had anything to do with like how early you went into labor, but then you went into labor again early, but that could also be the short cervix.
Yeah,
But
so
could it have been impacted with the heart rate, your the subchorionic hemorrhage?
I think the short answer is they don't really know.
Yeah.
From talking to my doctors and everything, at first with my older son, we thought that maybe my short cervix was caused by all the bleeding
Oh.
that I did, that maybe it irritated it or it got some sort of infection. But in talking to my doctor with the second pregnancy where it happened again and I wasn't bleeding, he thinks it was an anatomical thing that I just have a short cervix because I didn't have any of the risk factors like a leap or, you know, over there. And he, you know, whereas like in the first pregnancy, they were thinking I had an incompetent cervix, or I don't know the term that they use now.
They use that term. Yeah.
Cervical insufficiency, I think it is.
They use that too.
That, you know, because it happened again, but because I didn't need that cerclage and I technically made it to full term with the support of progesterone, that maybe it's just the way my body
Yeah.
is. And he said, if you have a third, which I don't think I'm planning to do, I think I'm gonna not take my chances at this point, that it would probably happen again. In
Yeah.
terms of the like heart rate and the infection with my first, that probably had more to do with my water breaking and an infection getting through. So it's kind of all, it was interesting too, because after I delivered the placenta with my VBAC, I think they showed it to me and they were like, you see that? I don't remember, but they were like, this looks a little weird. Like it almost looks like you had an abruption. So they took it.
Something that I wondered, like I wondered if you were starting to slowly abrupt through pushing.
Could have been. They took it for testing and I ended up having an infection, the same one that I had with my first son in it. So
Interesting.
I don't know. I feel a bit of a medical mystery. And I think I'm pretty
Yeah.
lucky that the VBAC turned out as like wonderfully as it did. But yeah, something, my body is not like, doesn't love pregnancy. So I feel really fortunate that I, you know, have two
Yeah.
babies. But yeah, it was definitely a wild ride. I feel like I've been in like pregnancy mode for so many years now, just trying to make sure these babies are okay. But it's a nice ending to that, era, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be super, it like not knowing the answer to some things, it can happen. I mean, it's happened for me, it's happened for many other women before you. Sometimes we just don't know. And we wonder, and we can wonder till we're blue in the face, or ask questions. But like, that doesn't even that analogy didn't even make sense. But yeah, like we can wonder and wonder and wonder and wonder and never know the answer. But then, luckily we can sit down and look at everything and say, like, these things did happen. We don't know why, but here we are. And you had two beautiful babies and two extremely different experiences. And yeah, do you feel like you've been able to kind of heal from that first experience?
I do, like I saw in therapy and meds, it actually inspired me. I can't remember if I mentioned it already, but I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And so it actually inspired me to start getting my certification in perinatal mental health, which is like an extra training. I haven't, like, full disclosure, I haven't taken the exam yet, so I'm not quite, certified in it because I got pregnant and had another baby in the middle of that.
You've
But I
been
mean,
doing some things.
I plan to finish that at some point, whenever I maybe can get some sleep. But yeah, it I do, I do think I was healed enough to want to have another kid and get pregnant again and go through, potentially that experience again. But I don't think I really healed fully to an extent, of course. Like, there are things I missed out. I didn't get, to meet my baby. I didn't hear his first cry, all the things that will never change. But I think having the VBAC experience and getting, not that it's a redo, but that, I didn't want to like live the rest of my life like not knowing. I feel like really at peace that I got to have that experience and now I know what that feels like and I appreciate it so much. So I do feel like the VBAC was really healing for me, even though it wasn't what I had planned. And, I'm sure that my planned C-section that I had, decided to do would have maybe been healing as well in a different way. But yeah, no, I mean, I do. I feel like proud of myself for trying at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm proud of you. Huge congrats, and thank you for sharing. Is there anything else that you feel like you would like to share with our women of strength?
I mean, I think just trusting in yourself. And also, I mean, if my story can, I think, don't be like me, like maybe prep, but also knowing that sometimes things just kind of work out, how they are supposed to. I was begging and crying for them to schedule my C-section earlier, but it was like the best thing that they wouldn't do it because that gave my body a chance to do it on its own when it was ready. So again, like serendipitous, I think.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Oh.
Congrats. And I know that you'll be touching, just like so many people on this podcast, every story is touching someone out there worldwide.
Thank you for having me and listening.
Absolutely. And yeah, that is it for 2025, you guys. So I hope that you enjoyed this year. We've got so many more things coming to you next year, and Happy New Year.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to the vbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link
actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.